officially to call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. It is Wednesday, April 8th. This is our first remote meeting conducted pursuant to recently adopted House rule. I believe it's 10.01. This should be live streamed on the House website, and it will be available on the House YouTube page as well. I am the chair of this committee. My name is Mike Freiberg. I'm the state representative from Golden Valley. Thank you, everybody, for being here. You see me looking over this way, I have a computer with committee documents over there, so I apologize if it appears that I'm not looking, but I'm just trying to work within the system that we have in place right now. The first item on our agenda is the call to order, and I believe this involves our committee legislative assistant taking the role of members who are here. So, Ms. Somick, could you please take the role?
Yes, Chair. Thank you. Representative Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Salk.
Present.
Representative Quam.
Present.
Representative Bonner.
Present.
Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Gomez.
Present.
Representative Heinrich. Representative Tegel.
Here.
Representative Lehman.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Lilly.
Present.
Representative Mason. Representative Nash.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Tice.
Present.
Representative Vogel.
Present.
Representative West.
Present.
And Representative Mason, just so you are aware, we did not hear you, so you may want to attempt to resolve your audio issues, whatever the best way to do that is. So the first item, the next item on our agenda is House File 4507, Representative Cagle's bill. Representative Cagle, I believe the appropriate motion, since we are past deadline, would be to move your bill to the Rules Committee. Would you like to make that motion?
I'd move that that the bill be moved to the Rules Committee.
Okay. Representative Cagle has moved House File 4507 to the Rules Committee. I know you have there's an amendment to the bill that I believe is an author's amendment, and that would put the bill in the shape you would like it. Would you like to move that as well?
Sure. I will move I don't have the number of the amendment in front of me, but I believe it's a
DE1
amendment.
Yes. Okay. Representative Cagle has moved the DE1 amendment to put the bill in the shape she would like. Is there any discussion? And I'm going to, when I ask for if there's discussion, I'm going to pause for what might seem an uncomfortable amount of time. I want to make sure anyone who wants to speak has the opportunity to do so. Okay, there is no discussion. I believe we are doing all votes by roll call. So I guess with this, moving this amendment will have to be by roll call as well. Ms. Somick, would you please take the roll on the DE1 amendment?
Yep. So the roll on the DE1 amendment, 4-0, Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Salk?
Yes.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Bonner?
Yes.
Representative Elkins?
Yes.
Representative Gomez?
Yes.
Representative Heinrich? Representative Cagle?
Yes.
Representative Lehman?
Yes.
Representative Lee?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
Yes.
Representative Mason? Representative Nash?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Tights?
Yes.
Representative Vogel?
Yes.
Representative West?
Yes.
15 ayes, Chair.
Okay, so the amendment has been adopted. Representative Cagle, would you like to present your bill?
Sure. So House File 4507 is similar language to a bill that we had last year and that Representative Nash carried the previous year, allowing local officials to participate in governance via interactive TV due to any kind of medical reasoning that would prevent them from being in public facing. So as amended, the elected officials, it would allow them to participate in meetings by interactive TV or Skype without making their location public when healthcare professionals determine that the elected official can't be in public due to personal or family medical reasons. This allowance is only during the state of when the state of emergency has been declared and can be used up to 60 days after the state of emergency has been lifted. So if if Governor Walz lifts the state of emergency, local officials who still may need to self-quarantine would be able to participate via Skype or Zoom up to 60 days after the lift of the emergency. So the bill also requires that this exception only be used 3 times per calendar year, and that also includes the military piece as well. And then we added a bit that requires a roll call vote for clarity. And then this change is particularly important to local governments because their governing bodies are a lot smaller. Like townships might only have 3 supervisors, and cities might often only have 5 council members. So if 1 or 2 people can't be there, that really endangers the cities to be able to act. And so I think this COVID-19 has made this more likely that we will see people who will not be able to participate or have to be quarantined or self-isolated.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. I do have one member who's raised their hand. I think I will go to, we do have 2 people who have signed up to testify on this bill. However, I think I will go to testimony first. Somebody needs to mute their phone as well. Actually, I think I can do that. Okay, I'm muted. Okay, I think Representative Mason is called in. You're currently muted, Representative Mason. So I will go to testimony first. There's 2 people who have signed up to testify, and then we will go to member discussion. So first on the list, I have Matt Ayling from the Minnesota Coalition on Government Information. Are you in a position where you can talk, Mr. Ayling? I think we might need you to turn up your volume. Or
can you hear me there?
That's, yes, much better.
Okay. Thank you. Am I live, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, you are speaking, so please proceed with your testimony. Well, I guess first, okay, identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Matt Ealing, Minnesota Coalition on Government Information. We are testifying in support of the roll call provision that's been added to HF 4507. Via the DE amendment. Mr. Chairman and members, the addition of the roll call language will make Minnesota statutes 13D.02, which this bill would modify, align with 2 other existing remote meeting provisions found in Minnesota's open meeting law, both of which currently include the requirement for a roll call. Having a roll call requirement in 13D.02 will also ensure that there is procedural clarity around votes taken using remote technology, and will also ensure the creation of a clear and unambiguous documentary record regarding actions of the public body that are being taken. So we believe that the roll call for votes provision is an important transparency feature of any remotely conducted meeting, whether it's conducted in whole or in part by remote means. And so we appreciate that feature has been added into the bill via the amendment. So that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to take any questions on the provision or more broadly about the open meeting law.
Thank you, Mr. Ayling. Why don't you stay in here and just mute your phone for the time being, and if somebody does have a question for you, then we can call on you at that point. So thank you for your testimony. The second testifier I have is Irene Gao from the League of Minnesota Cities. Ms. Gao, are you in a position where you can speak? Yep. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Gao. If you could please take yourself off of mute and then identify yourself and proceed with your testimony, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Irene Gao. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. As many of you know, the League represents 833 of Minnesota's 853 cities. I want to thank Representative Cagle and previously Representative Nash for bringing forward this bill. In light of what has been going on with COVID-19, it's brought this issue of being able to participate through interactive TV, or as Representative Cagle had mentioned, through the use of Skype or Zoom, even more needed. In your packets, you should have a joint letter of support. There are a number of local organizations representing local government who support this bill and have laid out the reasons why they think that this is important, including the Minnesota School Boards Association, Minnesota Association of Townships, and four different associations representing anywhere from small cities, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, to our metro cities and the Municipal Legislative Commission. Consistent with the last 2 years, when we had brought this bill up, we wanted to make sure that we consulted interested stakeholders. I know that Mr. Ealing had just testified to the roll call provision. We also had talked to the Newspapers Association to ensure that they didn't have any concerns, and they don't. As Representative Cagle had done a really good job of explaining the importance of allowing elected officials to fulfill their duties to the best of their abilities in light of these unique times is really important. And so we ask for your support of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Gao. If you could please just put yourself on mute and stay around in case there are any questions for you, that would be great. We do not have anyone else who signed up to testify on this provision. So we will go to member discussion. Representative Nash, you raised your hand.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the author, question regarding the bill, the provision in there that says that this may be used only 3 times per year. My question is, this shelter in place that the governor just extended will actually probably be longer than the periodicity for, say, a city council meeting to have more than 3 potential meetings. So I'm trying to figure out a solution or a rationale as to why the number of uses will be 3, because as the chair and others of us on this committee have all been in local government, during this shelter in place, there will be more than 3 regularly scheduled city council meetings for most city councils, townships, and county boards. Just trying to figure out, was that intended, and what are we going to do about that?
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nash, I think we need to keep working. This language is far from perfect, but right, it is where we are right now. And so I know I have had some emails with other members of the committee, and the 3 per calendar year, you know, was language previously that we had brought forward in the previous 2 sessions. And so, that's where we were. But I definitely think times are changing. As long as we're under the pandemic emergency provision or the peacetime emergency provision, that does give us does allow local governments to have flexibility. I think once we come out of the peacetime emergency is where we might need to keep working on some of this language.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think that would also be a good question for, is Mr. Gehring on the line with us?
He is. This might, I believe Ms. Dyson also is.
Or Ms. Dyson. Yeah, either one. I think that this is something that if we're going to do this, we should have as much clarity as we possibly can. And I know Ms. Dyson is great on municipal issues. I don't know that the peacetime emergency affords this or allows this or what this bill language does to preclude that or include that. So if we could get some clarity on that, Because I have spoken to several city administrators and city council members in my district, and when they read the language, they brought up the same point. So I would really appreciate some clarity on this.
Yeah. Ms. Dyson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nash, I think Representative Cagle referred to the other section of statute that governs meetings during a pandemic. It's in the next section of statute 13D.021. And there's a great deal of flexibility for meetings that it requires the declaration, but then they don't have to meet in a meeting room together. And there's no limit on how long that would last. It's just during the declaration. What the bill does add for the what the bill does add for meetings by interactive TV is that provision of going 60 days past the end of the declaration, so that someone who needs to be kept separate, a member of a city council or a town board that has to stay in quarantine after the declaration for up to 60 days because of their personal medical or family medical condition. I think that's the main difference between the two provisions, but then it's also changing the interactive TV statute, which applies all the time, to require in all circumstances that the votes be roll call votes. So I think there's some overlap, and I think the interactive TV provision has, it's available at all times, so this is limiting the use of that for medical purposes to the peacetime emergency, but there is the other statute available. I don't know if that answers your questions. I think there's some overlap between these sections, and I think the main addition is that 60 days past the end of the pandemic for use of interactive TV.
Representative Nash, I think Mr. Ayling or Ms. Gao might have some points to add on this as well. I can go to your question too, or call on them if you.
Let's get their clarification, and then I have another question.
Sure, how about I just call on them individually just to see if they have anything to add. Mr. Ayling, I believe you may have been involved in this provision.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a lot to add other than what was just said by research. The 13D.021 provision, the pandemic provision that already exists in law, has quite a bit of flexibility for use in these kinds of situations. Even the addition of the language that's going into 13D.02 in regards to medical condition exemptions wouldn't be necessarily needed because you have the pandemic provision available to you. The history of this addition to 13D.02 goes back, as folks have noted, a couple years, and it was purely a medical exception for cases where, and this was initially when it was first discussed a year or two ago, it didn't have the qualifying language about medical conditions arising from the state of emergency. It was purely a medical exception that was going to be added to 13D.02, but now it's been modified to have the emergency proviso in there as well. So that's the procedural history of how that came to be. But I would, again, just reiterate that there's existing flexibility under 13D.021 for local governments to use that pandemic provision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ayling. Ms. Gao, did you have anything to add?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, during this time when there is a state of emergency or a local emergency that has been declared, the provision that Ms. Dyson and Mr. Ayling just mentioned is what cities and other governments will rely on. And that is a lot more flexibility, as they had mentioned. But this change, even though the trigger for the use in terms of medical reasons is tied to a state of emergency being declared, the time that you would use this really most commonly would be after the state of emergency has been lifted. So the example that Representative Cagle is a good one. If there is someone who needs to self-quarantine, then 60 days after the lift of the state of emergency, they would be able to use this provision. But because the state of emergency has been lifted, they can't rely on the other provision. So this one, when we're talking about interactive TV, tends to have more requirements. And so it allows for a little bit more freedom that wouldn't exist otherwise. And so I would just encourage members to think about this, the state of emergency, as a trigger, not that it would be limiting in how they would use, how the open meeting law applies generally when there's a pandemic or a state of emergency. Hopefully that clears it up.
Thank you both. Representative Nash, you said you had a follow-up question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this would be for Ms. Dyson or somebody else in research as well. We are using the term interactive TV, and yet I will guarantee you none of us are actually on a TV. And I wanted to make sure that if this is going to move forward, that the definition, if there is an official definition in statute as to what interactive TV is, that it encompasses things like this, because I don't want to create a situation whereas you're using Zoom or Teams or some other technology where we wind up getting ourselves in a pickle because we actually aren't doing what the common term for what it is that we're trying to get done here is.
Ms. Dyson, to that point.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nash, that's a really good point. The statute itself just uses the term interactive TV, but in 2013, the Commissioner of Administration had an opinion that stated that in a specific instance, using Skype was the equivalent of TV. And I think that would also apply in the case of using something like Zoom, Google Hangouts, or any of the other mediums that are available. The pandemic statute uses the term telephone or other electronic means. Throughout the open meeting law, there are uses of terms that are not consistent. But I think that the interactive TV statute would encompass any of the electronic media that are available that are similar. And that's based on the Commissioner of Administration's opinion from 2013.
Well, and Mr. Chair, thank you. Would it be prudent then for us to perhaps add some clarifying language into this, Ms. Dyson, just because, you know, getting the opinion of the Commissioner of Administration from, I believe you said 2013, working in technology has changed, you know, a little since 2013. And I just want to make sure that we're being, we're exercising due diligence, because there will be people who may challenge things on very picayune reasons, and I don't want to be caught up in any of that.
Ms. Dyson, the phrase interactive TV is currently a term that's used in, right? I mean, I realize it's not ideal, and, you know, we probably wouldn't want to be hosting interactive meetings by telegraph either, but, first of all, there's, you know, the 24-hour rule for amendments would still be in place. I'd be reluctant to kind of amend this on the fly, I would think. And also, from what I understand, the language has generally been agreed to. I'm not sure by that, but I am certainly willing to, I think you do raise an interesting point, Representative Nash, and I'm certainly willing to raise this with the, and I imagine Representative Cagle could as well, with the people, you know, the Chair Hall in the Senate, as well as Senators Torres, Ray, and Lane, see if they would be amenable to that as part of the agreement that's required for these sorts of provisions to move forward at this point.
And Mr. Chair, I wanted to make sure the point was made. It's certainly something that could be fixed later, but, you know, in as much as we don't necessarily create statute just for the now, we want to make sure that we're not putting ourselves in a position where we have to fix something because of a lack of foresight. And if we're able to make it an easy change, then let's do so. If it's something that requires a great deal of effort, then we can certainly pick it up next year. But I just think that the point is germane that if we're going to use a technology, quite obviously, that isn't television, that we might want to accommodate the statute to reflect that.
Representative Cagle, is that something you would be willing to take back to the members of the other body, and as well as our own body that you've been in contact with about this provision?
Yeah, that's definitely, Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, I would be more than willing to do that. I think, you know, there was also some emails back and forth with Representative Quam about some other provisions that I was interested in. And so I'm hoping we can continue to work on this. You know, we've had many conversations with the Senate, and right now this is the language that has been agreed to, but by far it's not ideal. And I think, you know, we want to keep improving it and making sure that we're accomplishing what we need to accomplish through the statute.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Nash. Are you concluded your questions?
Just to be I'm sure. Done.
Okay. I believe Representative Nelson had a question or comment.
Oh, Mr. Chair. And I understand Representative Nash's point, but I think a lot of things that we're doing right now in this pandemic and a lot of other different areas, we're going to have to next session go back and I think look at a lot of these things and go through these statutes to make sure that next time we have, hopefully never, but next time we have a pandemic like this or a situation like this, we have fixed these things. And I think next session we're going to have to go back and look at these in great length anyway. And so I think getting done now, we don't want to let the perfect get in the way of the good. And this, I think, is a good start of what we're trying to do here. So I think we should just, you know, if we can work something out and get an agreement from all five parties that are involved, it might be something we can amend at a future committee. But right now, I think we could just pass this one on and continue to work on making it better. And again, maybe even next session, we're going to have to look at a lot of this stuff anyway.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Sauk, did I see you actually raise your hand?
Well, whatever way or method I'm supposed to use, I very much agree with the intent of Representative Nash's point here, and that is so far the wording that we live with is oftentimes only good up to the day we are alive and then what we are looking at in the future. So if we can make the language here as amorphous as possible or as indistinct as possible, but yet serviceable, we will be well served by that, because I will guarantee you that none of the brand devices are going to exist, you know, 3 years from now. So like Skype will probably be something else, and there will be all other kinds of things. So any wording that we're using that is in any way specific may seem that it makes sense now, but it is going to become burdensome in the future in terms of its specifying something. So I would try to make the language as generic, like two-way technology, communication technology, things that can be just to allow for it. And then the other thing I wanted to also ask about is this business about three times a year. Is that specific to control members so that they can only be gone X number of times as opposed to any other serviceable purpose?
Representative Cagle, or would you like to take that question, or Ms. Dyson?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Sauk. I think the intent was to make sure that people aren't participating in a local government that they don't actually live in, or you know, and so that they're, you know, just kind of making sure that they still are participating in person when they can, and that they're able to fulfill their duties. And I don't know if Ms. Gao has anything to add beyond that.
Anyone else have anything to add?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Quam, I did see your is this
attempts at getting noticed.
I saw you. Yeah, you can go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of points. One, the most generic would be you know, two-way communication, audio/visual/etc, whatever, you know, would be generic. From previous discussions, the reason for three per year, I believe people had concern that if you're going to be missing extensively, it's just not the interaction in the meeting, it's the general interaction, and therefore you might want to look at, you know, if you're going to be missing all the meetings, is this really something you should be participating in? And, you know, that's not meant to be commentary. That's just meant to be part of the discussion that happened in the past.
Mr. Chairman, may I add one other point? This is Matt Ealing.
Sure, Mr. Ealing, proceed. Sorry, I was muted.
Oh, certainly. One way to look at the language issue that's come up, which is a legitimate issue, and it's a hazard that you find in any kind of statutory description of a process that's going on today. They rarely last into the future. I think ideas that make the description of what we're dealing with more generic are good. One suggestion we would add would be if you look at the two other remote meeting provisions, there's a qualifier at the end of the caption description that says, or other electronic means. If you look at what the City of St. Paul currently is doing with 13D.021, the pandemic provision, they are using Zoom, which falls into the other electronic means category. So appending that kind of language under the caption description of 13D.02 would at least match the other two statutory provisions governing open meetings or remote meetings under the open meeting law.
Thank you, Mr. Ealing. Yes, that's a good suggestion. Representative Cagle has said she could take these suggestions back to the members of the other body and representatives that she's been negotiating with. So I think she will bring that suggestion as well. Representative Elkins, I think I saw you raise your hand.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Over the last couple of weeks, I've spent a lot of time diving into both the technology and the law as well, and have had side conversations with Mr. Ealing and Ms. Gao and others as well. And I certainly agree with Representative Nash's comments also. And the conclusion that I kind of came to jointly with Ms. Gao and Ms. Ealing is that this whole section of the law, you know, kind of grew through accretion over a period of years and definitely is in need of a comprehensive examination. But that was going to take more than the week or so that we would have, especially considering the complications of negotiating these things with the lesser body. And that since most cities were using the provisions of 13D.021, which don't have some of these limitations anyway, that rewrite activity could probably wait until a later point where we could devote the appropriate amount of time to it.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. I don't see anybody else on the list, but I'm going to wait 10 seconds or so just to make sure there isn't anyone else who would like to speak. Representative Cagle, did you have any closing remarks?
I just want to thank everybody for the good conversation. And, you know, I think this is a good start. And, you know, we've been working on this for a few years now. And so I don't think it's going to be the last time we see some of this language pop up. But I think dealing with the situation that we're in right now, I think it's good. And so I would really hope that members support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Seeing no additional discussion, Representative Cagle renews her motion that House File 4507, as amended, be referred to the Rules Committee. Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Okay. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Sock?
Yes.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Bonner?
Yes.
Representative Elkins?
Yes.
Representative Gomez?
Yes.
Representative Heinrich? Representative Cagle?
Yes.
Representative Lehman?
Yes.
Representative Lee?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
Yes.
Representative Mason? Representative Nash?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Tice?
Yes.
Representative Vogel?
Yes.
Representative West?
Yes.
Representative Mason, I don't know if heard you there. Can you?
Representative Mason?
Maybe give a thumbs up if you are voting yes.
Can we do that?
Okay, wait a minute. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, I can now.
There we go.
I don't know if we can do that, so it would be better to hear it in person.
Representative Mason?
Yes.
There we go. Thank you. 16 ayes, Chair.
Okay, there being 16 ayes and 0 nays, the motion is agreed to and the bill is on its way. Thank you for bringing it to the board, Representative Cagle. The next item, there isn't actually, I'll just give a brief presentation to committee staff. If you could just let Mr. Messelt, Mr. Hilgart, and Mr. Doerr in from the waiting room so they can be part of this, so they can be here as well. I think that would be helpful. Senator Kiffmeyer approached me. I believe she had been contacted by Sherburne County within her district to consider this language that is before us here. It's marked SC7479-4. There isn't a bill produced. As Senator Kiffmeyer has explained to me, this language has been approved by the Senate DFL, and I believe Representative Quam approved it on behalf of the House GOP as well. It's fairly straightforward. There is some language that allows local units of government to adopt or to accept electronic signatures for things they are otherwise required to get physical signatures for. But there was a certain lack of clarity, and I have Mr. Messelt from Sherburne County is here to speak, and I will hand this over to him shortly. But this language would allow local units of government to accept certain routine filings either electronically or by United States mail or by facsimile during a peacetime public health emergency. And so it's things like planning and zoning applications, land use documents, land conveyance documents. You can read the list of things here. So I think just with that, again, this was just sent to me as this sort of language, not the bill. So I don't have a bill to move, but I did want to make sure, since this is definitely within the jurisdiction of our committee, I wanted to make sure we at least had the opportunity to discuss it and provide testimony and get feedback on it from anyone who is interested. So I think with that, I won't make a motion, but I will ask Mr. Messelt if he would like to just speak for a couple minutes about this provision.
Thank you, sir. I don't know if I'm broadcasting yet, but I'll look for a head nod. Okay, thanks. I really appreciate the time. And yes, as you noted, Senator Kiffmeyer has been working with us on this. I thought it was good to listen to your conversation about the previous bill. I think Representative Nelson kind of really hit it on the head when he talks about the fact that in the long term, we probably should look at these type of issues of using electronic technology, but also that we can't let the perfect get in the way of the good at this point. In particular, it's ironic that we're meeting this way because this is exactly what a lot of the counties are talking about. My name is Bruce Messelt, and I'm serving as the administrator of Sherburne County. And as the chair said, I got demoted, I guess, from a commissioner to an administrator. But our chair, Felix Schmiesing, is actually over at MICA right now talking about some of these issues as well. I also serve as the vice president of the Minnesota Association of County Administrators. So we've raised this issue to you through AMC as well as through MACA to talk about this and to talk about why SC7479-4 is important. You referenced this, and I think it's where I should start. There's a question, why is this bill even needed? Because there's already on the books a Uniform Electronic Transaction Act, which is Minnesota Statute 325L. And so clearly we know what the legislature's intent is, which is to allow us local units of government to do as much as we can electronically. Unfortunately, there are very significant exceptions that were carved out for good reasons to that act. It includes sections of the Uniform Commercial Code, healthcare directives, wills, codicils, and trusts, exceptions for power of attorney and intrusive mental health treatments. But most importantly for counties, it excludes anything relating to the conveyance, power of attorney, or other instrument affecting real estate. So as a result of that, we have a whole body of actions that we do that are fairly unique to counties relating to all kinds of real estate transactions. You mentioned a couple of them, planning and zoning applications under 394 and 462, land use documents under 505, land conveyance documents under 507. All of those things are basically a limit on what we can do and how we can do business as a result of that. There are also documents relating to licenses for architects, engineers, landscapes. All of those under 326 also require what we would know, what you and I would call wet signatures. And then in our recorder's office, applications for birth certificates, death certificates under Minnesota Statute 144, and other things that I'll talk about later, which we don't cover in this bill for a lot of good reason. Now, normally, we would process these in person. Or there are some of these that can be utilized by a person going to a notary public and then getting that done and then sending it in. These don't pose a problem under normal times. But what's happened in the COVID-19 pandemic, and more importantly, the stay-at-home order, which has now been extended, and the social distancing requirements, is that these functions should not be, and in all practice, cannot be performed as they traditionally have been. Shutting down for 2 weeks is what we've done, and perhaps that worked. But now we're talking about a minimum of a five-week stay-at-home order. And more importantly, it's likely that with social distancing being continued, we'll be in a situation where we really shouldn't be having these in-person actions, activities at all for the foreseeable future defined by this emergency. So it made sense for us to come to you and talk about this and to seek authority for those things that the counties do that are critical functions that we put on hold for 2 weeks, but we think in good faith can't be held forever, while honoring those stay-at-home orders and the social distancing and the social gathering guidelines. The best way we think is to do that is to authorize us to accept verified identities and verified e-signatures, just like are allowed under 325L, or if necessary, verified facsimiles or mail transactions, but only doing it during this declared emergency and only by using the existing and proven means and processes that are already in statute. So what that means is for some of these governmental functions, unless we act today, there's no alternative for us to find a way to get the required wet signatures or the in-person verifications. And I'm going to be honest with you. We have counties that are having people drive up. You run out there with a full garb and mask on. You hand them with a glove on. You hand them a piece of paper. They sign it. You try to verify who it is, and you run back in. It kind of sounds like Wisconsin yesterday with voting. It's not a good way for us to do government, and I would say it's even at greater risk of fraud. So what we're doing is we're looking for the ability to do these type of functions and not just put them on hold for the foreseeable future. Now, there are a few cases where notary publics can be used. I want to just highlight those. They are a very valid way to do business. We intend to use those whenever and wherever possible. However, if you use a traditionally notary public, you still have to go visit them in person, and they still have to observe your wet signature. So that doesn't solve that issue of shelter at home or social distancing. There is a electronic process that was just really put into place last year by the legislature. It's called remote online notarization. And there's another law that's called e-notarization, which lets notaries notarize something electronically from a distance and then transfer it to a government if that system's set up. There are a few cases where that's set up in the long term. I think that's what we're going to have to look at, including me getting my staff licensed as a notary to do that. But until then, we're limited with some that by statute a notary can't do, and we're limited by the fact that there just isn't a way to ramp that up in the short term. There are other examples of very valid electronic signatures. You've probably all used DocuSign or heard about Adobe Sign or HelloSign. These are legally valid signatures we already use. We just don't use them for some of these recording functions. So our challenge is, how do we deal with this in the short term? And then, as Representative Nelson said, try to fix this in the long term. And remember, even using the e-notarization is just a partial solution, because a lot of those things still require higher levels. Without this bill, we're either going to have to come up with a way to verify and sign documents like we're doing now, kind of fly by night, or we're going to have to deny services to our citizens, or we're going to have to figure out if we can find notaries to fill in the gap here in the short term. So what we're asking for is very limited statutory authority to provide us with one additional tool which can address these essential government functions for the emergency. A couple notes on the bill. It's permissive. It doesn't require, nor does it obligate a county or a city to use it. But it does create a tool where there is one not now. The language is also only effective for the timeframe of this declared emergency, and we can determine if such permanent authorization is needed or warranted later when we come back to you and say, here's what worked and here's what didn't. The language has been crafted with the input and support of AMC, MICA, and MACA. And under existing laws, counties still remain fully obligated to perform and provide the most possible level of verification and security for these activities. So we would argue there's a significant decreased risk of fraud by letting us do this than what we're having to do now. And in fact, the notary system kind of shows us the way. Here's what's required by us under 325L. LGUs are required to follow specific requirements for acceptance of electronic records, including giving due consideration to security, specification of control processes and procedures as appropriate to ensure adequate preservation, disposition, integrity, security, confidentiality, and auditability of electronic records. So we would follow those existing statutory constraints. What does this legislation not do? And I think it's important the committee know this. With respect to a few required in-person transactions, which may be of interest to you but are not part of this bill, it does not change how marriage licenses are being transacted. That is coming to you under a separate bill because of the way it's being crafted by the courts. It does not affect how gun permits are processed. This may be addressed later, but it's going to come through the Sheriff's Association, the Police Chiefs Association, and through your public safety committees. It does not address the in-person requirements for driver's licenses, real estate, real IDs, or passports. It's already been agreed that we can put most of those off for the short term. And those things that we can do, like tags, we do in the mail. It also will not affect plats, because plats by specific statute require wet signature. And this can, but the nice thing is we already do those by mail. So what happens is if somebody signs the plat, sends it to us, I physically walk it around the building and have all the signatures. And because of the Mylars, it has to be recorded separately. The good news is we found a good process for that. It's these other ones that we're struggling with. And finally, I want to note it doesn't affect our public health, our human services, our assessor, or our corrections of functions, which all have been able to adjust the in-person meeting requirements during the pandemic emergency. So we think we're covered pretty good right there. In summary, I just want to point out that this committee meeting today is exactly a testimony of what we're trying to accomplish during a pandemic emergency, providing necessary customer service activities while not having to do them in person and making people drive down here to give us a signature. If we can figure out a way, just like we are during this crisis, to introduce, deliberate, and pass legislation with a combination of smart technology, electronic communications, and limited social interaction, surely we can do the same with the execution of these types of important local transactions and functions. That's exactly what SC 7479-4 does. And I hope you understand why we're asking for that authority. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Messelt. I do have one member question, but I think I'm going to go through the testimony first. But Mr. Messelt and other testifiers can stick around in case there is a question that's appropriate for them. I do believe Matt Hilgart from the Association of Counties is also available if there are specific questions. I know they have been advocating for this provision as well. With that, the next testifier, but he said he didn't need to testify otherwise. So with that, the next testifier I have is Rob Dorr. I see you there. If you could please unmute yourself, identify yourself for the record, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rob Dorr. I'm the political director of the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. And Mr. Messel was kind of running through some of the challenges that the counties are facing, our sheriffs are facing some of these problems with the issuance of permits to carry. There's two types of gun permits that are handled by municipalities. First is the permit to purchase, which goes to the local police department. If there isn't a municipal police department, then it goes to the sheriff. Those are able, and they're being done right now via mail or online forms or emails. There doesn't require it in person. 622.714, the permit to carry law specifically requires that the application for a permit to carry be made in person. Now, this has posed a challenge with a lot of county buildings being closed that share facilities with the sheriff's office. I spoke recently to numerous sheriffs, but Sheriff of Carver County, he was having some issues with the county building being closed, and he had to work out kind of an appointment scheduling system. The same has happened with Wright County. My own Sheriff Stewart of Anoka County, he's struggling with this, where the actual support services for his county, office come from the county, and those members aren't working right now. So the fact that it has to be done in person is posing a significant barrier to the sheriffs, and there really is no practical reason why that has to happen in person, but it does exist in statute, and they're not able to circumvent that. Some creative ways that they are being able to meet their obligation to process these permit to carries is they're doing this appointment system. They're setting up limited hours and limited locations, so they're only having staff available for a couple hours, a couple times a week. One I thought was interesting was they have a drop box where you actually just run up to the building and drop it. Nobody receives it, but that meets the in-person requirement. But overall, there is a statutory obligation to process these permits. There's a constitutional obligation to allow people to exercise this right, and we're putting the public at risk by not including that. Now, I heard the Public Safety Committee invoked. I've spoken to the two members on both sides of the aisle of the Public Safety Committee. They both directed me to this committee hearing this bill on both sides of the aisle to bring this topic up. So I don't think they're anticipating bringing that up, and so I think they're putting the ball in your court to address this issue. So with that, I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Doerr. Just to that last point, I did actually speak briefly to the chair of the Public Safety Committee. I think this probably would be an issue better left by addressed by them, and he seemed to agree. I'm not sure exactly who he spoke to that said it was in this committee's jurisdiction necessarily. I'm happy to talk about it, but there are. I know that the language related to marriage licenses, I believe Representative Dabney is carrying that, and it's being addressed in the Civil Law Committee.
Judiciary, yeah, Civil.
Yeah, Judiciary, and then I think some of the issues related to driver's licenses. I don't know if it's this one exactly, but I believe that's being handled in the Transportation Committee. So, I mean, there's some of this is being done in different committees. I guess is the only point I'm trying to make. So. But with that, I have Representative Nash and then Representative Quam on the list.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the question that Mr. Doerr brings up, he and I worked with Carver County Sheriff Camrud to find a solution around the problem around permits to carry. And we were able to craft something, but I was having a socially distanced lunch with the sheriff today. And I asked him, what is the magic of having a permit to carry done in person? And he said, other than the statutory requirement that was put in place back in the day, there is absolutely nothing that the sheriffs do with the fact that it has to be presented in person. So I would encourage us to figure out what committee is properly the committee of jurisdiction and get this fixed, because let's say this goes on for another month or another 2 months or whatever. Regardless of where a person might find themselves on the gun issue, allowing someone to take advantage of a constitutionally guaranteed right is something that I think we all agree that we don't want to get in the way of. So finding a way to allow that to happen is something that we need to work on. So that's one point. My question, I guess, would also be again for House Research. Did I read in the initial draft of the bill that birth certificates can be covered in what we're talking about today?
Ms. Dyson, would you like to take that? I'm not sure I actually saw, I did have my name put as the author of this, but I'm not sure I actually saw earlier drafts of this. This was sent to me yesterday, I believe, by Senator Kiffmeyer. But Ms. Dyson, I don't know if you can expand on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, in the bill draft that I'm looking at, SC 7479-4, on line 118, it says that it includes applications for birth and death certificates under Minnesota statutes section 144.225.
Yeah, and that's what I had thought I had read, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, not being in the committee room sometimes gets you out of the habit. So my concern around this particular aspect is that a birth certificate is something that can be utilized in stealing someone's identity. And I don't want to make that easier. I'd like to hear maybe from some of the testifiers and from Ms. Dyson. I have concerns about that particular provision. I mean, marriage certificate, fine. Building permits, fine. Other pieces of that are just fine by me. But when you understand the ease at which your identity can be stolen, making this something that's a little easier seems to be problematic for me.
Mr. Messelt or Mr. Hilgart, would one of you like to comment on that? Oh, Mr. Messelt, I saw you raise your hand. You're muted. Let's see, I think. Okay, I just unmuted.
Okay, there, the host unmuted me. Thank you. Yeah. With respect to birth certificates and wed certificate or death certificates, currently the recorder tells me that we require, a lot of counties require what's called a WAD signature, so an in-person request for those certificates. However, under current statute, they can be requested and processed via the notarization under state law. So that means theoretically, if you requested a birth certificate, you could contact a notary, do what's called a remote online notarization of your request, and they can then e-notarize it and send it to us, and we can process it. The notary is the fail-safe to make sure that there isn't somebody doing something deceptive. The statute for e-notarization and for remote online notarization is very prescriptive. It gives a lot of requirements, and it's almost exactly what your previous conversation was. Requires multi-factor authentication, audio-visual, real-time connectivity, and verification of the individual. I'm not going to say fraud can't happen, because obviously we've all heard about bad notary publics, but the reality is should we elect to do it electronically without going through the existing authorized notarization process, we would have to follow the same level of rigor in terms of verification of identity of the individual and verification of the signature electronically before we would process it. So it would have at minimum the same amount of security as the current statute. And I might even be so bold as to say, because we're the repository of those records, I think my staff will be much more finicky in making sure it complies even than a third party might be, but that's my opinion.
Sorry, I was muted myself. Mr. Hilbert, would you like to address this at all?
Not this specific topic. I think Mr. Messelt covered it very well. And by the way, again, this is Matt Hilgart from the Association of Minnesota Counties. Good to be speaking to you all. I just wanted to, Mr. Chair, very briefly just thank everyone here for all the work they're doing in these remote environments to try to make government work for the people. And I think we've already, as a legislature, tried to act, especially in the health and human services realm, to help some of our social services workers assist with their customers in this time. I know that Representative Peggy Scott and Representative Dabney are working on some of the marriage license flexibility requirements, and I want to thank them. And I know this committee now is looking at the e-signature piece. So I think, again, it just underscores the fact that we're in unprecedented times. And we are trying to, in these times, we're trying to make government flexible and accountable and still be able to serve its customers, residents, and people. So thank you very much for all your work on that.
Thank you, Mr. Hilgert. Representative Nash, did you have any follow-up to that?
Mr. Chair, no. Perhaps better brought offline with Mr. Metzold and some others. I do have some concerns about making something easier. I remember the e-notary conversation from, I believe, Commerce Committee 2 years ago. So I understand the rigors that will be around that. But I work in cybersecurity, which deals a lot with identity theft. And I have some concerns with this. So if we could talk offline, Mr. Metzl, I believe you've got my number. If not, we can get it to you if you just reach out to me at my legislative email. I do have some principal concerns. And Mr. Chair, if I remember, this is not a live bill, so we have time to play with it still.
Representative Nash, I'm not totally sure it's not. So from what Senator Kiffmeyer told me, there was agreement from the four caucuses as well as the administration. So actually, Representative Quam is next on the list. So I think I might call on him because I think Senator Kiffmeyer might have referenced having spoken with him, or maybe that was Senator Hall. I think, let's see. Representative Quam, are you? Yes.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I had some initial consultation with Senator Kiffmeyer and Hall on the general topic. I expressed concerns about, fraud protection plus the broadness coverage of stuff. But I said, if they're working on it, the Senate should continue to work on it. So I conveyed that because it's a valid area to look at. But my concerns are making sure there's sufficient checks and balances for fraud. And also, are there areas that aren't looking? We're discussing a process. So it doesn't matter if it's marriage, if it's gun rights, access to a gun permit, et cetera, et cetera. We're discussing the process, and we need to have the process appropriately defined and have countermeasures to fraud and other issues. I don't feel that there is enough of a definition yet to where we would put it on the agenda and throw it over the wall. So I had an informal, little touching base right before caucus started, and we had session, and that was, and then we had a LAC, Zoom meeting. So there was not an in-depth discussion. And I apologize if my conveying of, continue to work on this was taken as a everything's hunky dory and we're all smiles and chuckles.
Thank you for that clarification, Ranking Member Quam. So maybe what I'll do is just get back in touch with them and suggest they follow up with you and see if they either they have an explanation or if you have concerns, you and Representative Nash have concerns, then if there's a way those can be addressed still within the deadline. So certainly at the very earliest, this would not be taken up on the floor before next week. So if it's still possible to work through some of these issues, that would be the ideal situation. But we do still have a few days at the very least. We will be starting our Easter Passover recess this evening, I believe. Did you have any additional questions or comments, Ranking Member Quam? Or should I believe I might have seen Representative Salk raise his hand too. I could call on him.
I'm just, Mr. Chair, we yes. can probably chat offline and have more clarity.
Sure, that sounds good. Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I have comes from Mr. Messalt's description of their process as they were dealing with the issue of notary versus electronic notary and all those other procedures. And he sort of hinted at one of the things that my experience in real estate did lots of courthouse recordings and that sort of thing. And I do know that the procedure sometimes gets relied upon, but can become a little creaky if a new person is there or something like that happens. And as he referred to that, his people would give great scrutiny in their procedure to an electronic notary, possibly more so than a regular one. It kind of goes to what even Representative Quam was referring to, is that these things that are generalized as procedure are not, to my mind, aren't really good enough for this kind of thing. We need to have it either codified as it must meet these marks. And I know that like probably 99% of the work that's done in a recorder's office does meet that. It's just that if we can, to the extent that we can remove the difference of procedure from one county to another, from one office to another, those kinds of things, is to then make everything level and equal across the state. And I don't know if he wants to make some sort of comment about that or not.
Sure, Mr. Messelt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quick, that comment was really openly discussed, and it's actually welcomed. And without, you know, reciting statutes to you all, I will just tell you that there is a very prescriptive statute. Just want to pull it up here real quick, that the e-notaries are required to follow when they do, online remote notarization. It's 325L.11, and then the cross-reference is 359.01 subdivision 5. And it literally lays out in probably the most detail I've seen in statute what a notary has to do in order to verify. And it requires those things that you and I have all had to do, which is they ask you 5 questions that you have to answer from information available, you know, whether you owned a 1959 DeSoto or not, and did you live on Ivy or you know, Key Street. And I mean, it's that prescriptive. And so we originally cross-referenced that specifically in this bill, but the reality is we're obligated under the reference I gave you to follow it anyhow. So if it's important for that, we can clearly cross-reference it even more specifically. I'll be honest, we didn't want to reinvent the wheel. We didn't want to create new requirements for what meant audio-visual verification. We just mirror what you've already done last year in 359. So if that's important, though, we could add that cross-reference again.
No, that's all right. Thank you.
Okay. I don't see any other members who've asked to speak, but I'll give 10 seconds just to make sure there aren't any. Okay, that's fine. And again, as I said, this is just language that was sent to me. There is no actual bill, so this was just informational. So I'm not making a motion. We don't need to vote on that. I did overlook the minutes of the meeting, however, so that I think is the last thing we need to do before we adjourn is approve the minutes for the March 12th, 2020 meeting of the Government Operations Committee. Is there anyone who would, Representative Sauk, as the Vice Chair, would you like to move approval of the minutes?
I'll move approval of minutes.
Okay, is there any discussion to the minutes? I'll give about 10 seconds here. Okay, seeing none, could the staff please unmute everybody? And then Ms. Zomick, could you take the roll, please?
Okay. Moving the minutes, Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Sauk?
Yes.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Bonner?
Yes.
Representative Elkins?
Yes.
Representative Gomez?
Aye.
Representative Heinrich? Representative Kegel?
Yes.
Representative Lehman?
Yes.
Representative Lee?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
Yes.
Representative Mason?
Yes.
Representative Nash?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Tice?
Aye.
Representative Vogel?
Yes.
Representative West?
Yes.
16 ayes.
Sorry, there being 16 ayes and zero nays, the minutes are approved. Maybe I'll give 10 seconds. So there are no, we don't have any additional things scheduled at this point for government operations, but, you know, keep track of your emails just to see if any do get scheduled. You know, it certainly won't be before this week, I suspect, but, you know, possibly next week or so. So maybe I'll just give about 10 seconds just to see if any members have any questions. I see a little hand next to you, Representative Nash, and Representative Nelson, I see you gesturing.
Yes, Mr. Chair, before we go in your disco basement, is there a disco ball that you could light to take us out of committee?
Unfortunately, I have not invested in a disco ball yet, but it would be consistent with the 70s theme of my house. So maybe next.
Should we start a GoFundMe?
If you'd like to, you're more than welcome to. Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I have is House File the 4507, where did we send that to? We passed it, but where did it get sent to? I don't remember that being part of the motion.
Yeah, it got sent to the Rules Committee.
That's right. Thank you. Yeah.
Yep. So
never mind.
I'm not actually 100% sure that's the correct motion, but if...
Technically, Mr. Chair, technically when we send them, when we're past deadline, we send them to the next committee it's supposed to go to, and then the Rules Committee intercepts it and sends it there. So I think that we may have made the wrong motion on that.
Yes, I was reminded of that afterwards. If we still have a quorum here, we could revisit that motion. I believe Representative Cagle, do you know, I would assume that the motion would have been to send it to the general register.
That's what I'm assuming. Last year, that's where the bill went to after we passed it out of GovOp.
Okay, well, then I guess it would probably be a good idea to make the correct motion. Ms. Dyson, would the proper procedure here be to... reconsider the motion to send it to rules? How should we proceed here?
Mr. Chair, I'm not much of a parliamentarian, but I believe you're correct that you would reconsider the it's either the vote or the decision by the committee to send it to rules and then move to send it to the general register.
Okay, I will move to reconsider the motion to send House File 4507 as amended to the Rules Committee. Is there any discussion to this motion? Representative Quam, I see you've raised your hand.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. Senator Kiffmeyer had an urgent call to me on one of our related matters, and I just wanted to clarify what you are you doing Cagle's bill?
Yeah, this is just we made the incorrect motion on Representative Cagle's bill. We sent it to the Rules Committee directly. Traditionally what happens is it gets sent to the next committee that it's scheduled to, and then the Rules Committee grabs it if it has failed to meet deadlines. So we're going to the motion, assuming it passes, will be to reconsider the motion to send it to the Rules Committee, and then there will be a subsequent motion to send it to the general register.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
You're welcome. Any additional discussion to the motion to reconsider the motion to send 4507 to the Rules Committee? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Sorry, I was still muted. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Saw?
Yes.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Bonner?
Yes.
Representative Elkins?
Yes.
Representative Gomez?
Aye.
Representative Heinrich? Representative Cagle?
Yes.
Representative Lehman?
Yes.
Representative Lee?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Yes.
Representative Nash? Representative Nash? Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Tice?
Aye.
Representative Vogel?
Yes.
Representative West?
Aye.
16 ayes.
There being 16 ayes, the motion to reconsider House File 4507 has passed. Representative Cagle, would you like to move that House File 4507 as amended be referred to the General Register?
So moved.
Okay. Representative Cagle has moved House File 4507 as amended to the General Register. Is there any discussion to this motion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Salk?
Yes.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Bonner?
Yes.
Representative Elkins?
Yes.
Representative Gomez?
Aye.
Representative Heinrich? Representative Cagle?
Yes.
Representative Lehman?
Yes.
Representative Lee?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
Yes.
Representative Mason?
Yes.
Representative Nash? Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Tice?
Yes.
Representative Vogel?
Yes.
Representative West?
Aye.
15 ayes.
Okay, there being 15 ayes, House File 4507 as amended is referred to the General Register. Thank you for that, for making sure we follow the right procedure. Is there any additional discussion before I adjourn this meeting? Okay, seeing none, this meeting, this first ever remote meeting of the Government Operations Committee is adjourned.